I hear the voice of my grandmother calling me. I hear the voice of my grandmother calling. Wake up, wake up. She says, wake up, wake up. Listen, listen. Listen, listen. May the rivers all run free. May the mountains be unspoiled. May the air be pure. May the trees grow up tall. May the earth be shared by all. I hear the voice of my grandmother calling me. I hear the voice of my grandmother calling. Wake up, wake up. She says, wake up, wake up. Listen, listen. Listen, listen. May the rivers all run free. May the mountains be unspoiled. May the air be pure. May the trees grow up tall. May the earth be shared by all. May the air be pure. May the trees grow up tall. May the earth be shared by all.
Hello and welcome to the Womb-Centered Healing Podcast. I'm Sama Morningstar and I have Danielle Ashe with me here today. Thank you so much for joining us, Danielle. I met Danielle on social media. You were publishing a collaborative book. Remind me of the title of that book again.
The book is titled Ancient Future Unity, Reclaim Your Roots, Liberate Your Lineage, Live a Legacy of Love.
Oh, and I just fell in love with that book and reached out and ended up interviewing several of the authors on the book. So podcast listeners, you may have, you may remember previous episodes where I got to speak with a couple of the contributing authors in that book. And now today we get to visit with Danielle, who this was, you created that book, or you organized or facilitated that collaborative book?
Yes, I did. And I mean, it was a vision that I had after I participated in a collaborative book project through Flower of Life Press. Mm-hmm. Which Astara Jane Ashley is the publisher of Flower of Life Press. And she just has this beautiful collaborative book project where there's a series of books with a series of different women contributing their stories. And I was feeling, you know, as I participated, that this would be something really beautiful to have centering the voices of women of color. So like an edition of the collaborative book series, mm-hmm. Focusing on women of color's voices and stories. And she really loved the idea and had been wanting to create other imprints, like so smaller branches of the Flower of Life Press publishing company. And so she invited me to create a new branch that centered around the voices of women of color and their stories.
Wow.
And so this is the first publication from that new branch. And yeah, it's just really exciting to, you know, create this sort of new lineage, this sort of new kind of anthology that, you know, my vision is that it will continue for generations, and that, you know, people will be able to read the stories, you know, of their grandparents, or, you know, their grandmothers and their aunts, and, you know, so just to have this kind of living library and anthology that will continue, because, you know, stories are something that transmit so much wisdom through experience. And I feel that preserving stories and sharing them more widely is a very beneficial thing for all of us, not only sharing them, like, you know, preserving them for others, but also the process that the authors go through, this like alchemical process of, you know, some of these women are, it's the first time they're becoming a published author. And in writing your story, there is also this element of transformation and, you know, healing and empowerment and alchemy that comes through. So that's what I experienced when I wrote my story for that collaborative book project. And then I was thinking, like, this is something that more women would really benefit from. So that's where the Ancient Future Unity book project began, and it's going to continue with other with a series of these books.
So inspiring. And so is that book published now? Because I remember when I was interviewing some of the contributing authors previously, it had not yet been published.
The book is still being edited, and, you know, the final touches are being put on the store or on the book. So it should be released in March. So next okay. month. So wonderful. Yeah, keep a look out for that. We're really excited. It's taken a little bit longer, you know, to get everything together. We originally were shooting for February, but we're pushing it back a month or so.
Oh, believe me, I know what you mean. I'm involved in my own book publishing process, and the date keeps getting pushed back. So I get it. I can't imagine coordinating a whole group of authors in a book. There's a whole lot more that needs to be coordinated, and sometimes can take more time than what we initially anticipated. So wonderful. So can we put the link to, is there still the possibility of pre-purchasing or pre-ordering the book before it comes out?
Yes, there is.
All right. Wonderful. So we can put a link for that in the show notes here. So people who want to do that. And I had initially wanted to have you on the show to talk about that book. So we can talk about that some today, but there's been since then a whole bunch of other things for us to talk about as well, since we met around the book project. And so, because now we're both part of, a Restore Unity program organized by our friend Imani. And she was on the podcast recently as well, talking about that program. And it turns out that Danielle and I are both guest presenters in this program. And so I'd love to talk about that as well. And I'm imagining that there's some overlap between the intentions and the intentions of the book project with the intentions of this program with Imani. So I'd love to hear how those two projects maybe flow into each other or support each other, and how this, what you were sharing with me earlier is that the idea for the Restore Unity project came out of a conversation that you were having with the Imani on her podcast. So I would love to hear how that came about as well.
All right. Well, yeah, I love all the overlaps, you know, even between you and I connecting around the book and then coming full circle with being part of a project together. And, you know, it's a small world in that sense. All right. So the connection, yeah, there is a connection between the Ancient Future Unity Collaborative Book Project and the work around Restore Unity. And the conversation Imani and I had, which I believe our podcast that we recorded for her podcast, the I Am Sovereign podcast, was around beyond anti-racism. Because it was something that I was writing a lot about when, you know, last year when, you know, people started taking notice really for the first time, you know, and on a bigger level around racism and healing, the wounds that are still present, you know, that so many people just kind of disregarded because it wasn't directly affecting them or they weren't really conscious about it. But what I was finding is that there's there's a lot of the conversation that was being left out. You know, people talking about privilege and oppression and those types of things, but they're actually like, while I'm like trying to remember exactly, that was a while ago. But there was just pieces that weren't being addressed. And in our conversation, we just kind of like went into the, well, what's beyond that? What's like, what is the deeper healing that needs to happen within ourselves as individuals, to not just educate ourselves about what has happened in the past and knowing, you know, that some people are privileged and how it affects other people, but like, how do we heal so that these systems, you know, of oppression, like, of course, educating ourselves around these systems is important, but then there's like a deeper layer of healing, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh my goodness.
So like, how do we get, you know, how do we get in there? You know, because it felt like the anti-racism trainings are like, okay, if I'm a professional, I have a business, you know, like, don't do this, don't do this, don't say this, because that's racist, you know, right? But like, how do we connect with ourselves and each other on a deeper level so that we see kind of beyond the divisions and the separation that has been created because of the systems that we've had in our country and all over the world historically. So, yeah, so that went there. And for me, the book project ties into that because giving women of color the centering the voices of women of color and saying, we want to just hear your story and we just want to hear what you have to say with an open heart, as far as just what your lived experience has been, is really powerful, more so than, or in a different way than educating people about what racism is, you know, to actually hear what someone's experience has been in the world, whether or not it is directly a story about racism or about race, but just like the reason why there are divisions oftentimes is because we're not exposed to each other. We don't hear each other. We're not able to listen to each other. And there aren't opportunities to do that always, you know, being, you know, living maybe in different, you know, in different, navigating different spaces that are not more integrated, I guess. I don't know, integrated sounds like such an outdated word, but like, you know, in cities, for example, you know, there's like usually an area that's more wealthy and an area that's more poor. And usually, you know, you can see race is kind of separated between these spaces. And so there's like a disconnect. And so that's where the book project comes in is, I mean, and it's also not about race either, the book project, because the sharing of stories are just as important for, you know, Black women, Black men, white women, white men to hear, you know, just as you know, it's important for us to hear each other's stories as women of color. It's important for men to hear the stories too. It's important for everyone. So just sharing stories, period, you know, like, let's just connect, let's just speak and know that will reach people that it needs to reach. So that was the intention with the book project as well. And then again, I may be repeating myself, but like, and then more than anything, I feel like the intention for sharing stories is the author's personal journey, that writing a story, the transformation that happens there, and how that can be healing or empowering on an individual level. And then that ripples outward. as well. So there's many dimensions that go into the book and how it relates to restoring unity and going beyond anti-racism and the transformation, the deeper transformation and healing.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Danielle, for sharing all of that. It just is weaving so many things together. I feel like part of the reason I'm part of the Restore Unity program that Imani has been putting together and inviting, and it sounds like you were part of the impetus for that in that conversation that you had of beyond anti-racism. But I got sort of drawn into it as well because I was having a conversation with Imani about how ancestral traumas perpetuate these the wounding of racism in our day-to-day lives, and unaddressed personal traumas for people of color, for white people, for everyone, it perpetuates that. And that, just like you were saying, a business person saying, okay, I'm going to train my people not to say this and not to say that, and I'm not going to say this and I'm not going to say that, and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that, without addressing that underlying trauma that is the reason for why those difficult relationship patterns are there, that trauma is going to keep coming up in another way, even if you get the best rule book for what to say and what to do in order to be anti-racist, right? And
so, right.
Those traumas are going to find another way to come to the surface and perpetuate harm, and until we heal them, until we heal that on a deeper level. And so it feels like that's what this Restore Unity impulse is calling us into, is how can we heal this trauma? And the thing is, these traumas happened collectively. They didn't happen to individuals by themselves. They happened in relationship.
Right.
And yes, happened in the context of a relationship between people of different classes, people of different heritage, and the relationship between them. So it seems like in order to restore unity and to truly overcome these collective traumas together, we need to do the healing process together at a certain point.
Yes. Yes. Witnessing each other, witnessing each other in authentic, honest expression is definitely part of it. I'm curious to, co-facilitate and be in those spaces. I mean, and I've already been in spaces like that, I feel, without like intentionally knowing. That's part of, I think that's part of why I have the perspective that I have, is because I grew up in, as a Black woman, I grew up in an all white community. My parents both grew up in poor families, really big families in the housing projects in Chicago. And they were, from a generation that really wanted to leave the city to have kids and raise kids, with the schools that were better, quote unquote, than like the public schools in the city and all of that. So I, grew up one of the few Black families in my whole neighborhood, one of the few Black children in the school, from a very young age. And then when I got older, the schools came together from different, surrounding communities. So there were more, students of color and Black students, but it was a really interesting experience for me to be different, but to kind of like how I was saying earlier with the sharing of stories, it's like I've been exposed to white culture in a way that, you know, a lot of people haven't. And so I feel like it has pushed me to look beyond race in certain ways and to be in spaces, you know, that a lot of Black people have not been in. And it's definitely been challenging. You know, it was challenging to be in that position, but also very eye-opening. And so I just have had such a unique journey around my identity and race and, you know, class and gender and oppression and power and privilege and all those topics. And it was something that I studied in college, you know, and was really passionate about, and went through many phases, you know, many healing phases around it. And I feel like I've reached the point where I personally have healed a lot of the trauma and a lot of the wounds. And I'm really honored and blessed and grateful to be in this position and to be ready to, you know, hold the space for, you know, whether it's, you know, a mixed group of people coming together to with the intention to heal and to, you know, unite, or whether it's, you know, groups of only people of color, mm-hmm. or only white people, because I've seen that too with this anti-racism. You know, it's been really focused on, like, you know, educating white folks, you know, non-POC people around racism. Mm-hmm. But I like how this is like the next step, like you said, the healing of people of color and of white people and coming together.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, Danielle, you talked about healing a lot of the trauma patterns for yourself. Can you share what healing practices or modalities you feel have been central in that process, and that perhaps you continue to engage with as the need arises?
That is a really good question. That's a really good question. Let me see. I would say I practice yoga in a sense of like hatha yoga, but also I also like a form of yoga that I wouldn't even necessarily label. And yoga meaning union with the divine, union with all that is, you know, experiencing the oneness that's beyond kind of this like physical realm. And that has come through shamanic work, working with plant medicines, spending a lot of time in nature, meditation, movement, you know, yoga, more yin style, asana and hatha yoga and kundalini yoga. I mean, I guess kind of like my own interpretation of kundalini yoga, you could say, not necessarily like the lineage of Yogi Bhajan, but tantra. Travel has also been really healing for me. And as I said, I was raised in a mostly predominantly white community. And even being in the United States, leaving the United States and leaving kind of this culture to go to places of where different people of the African diaspora have landed. So like the Caribbean, I've also gone to Africa, South Africa in particular, and done this kind of like soul searching to shed the cultural conditioning and the trauma that was really inflicted on the land that is the United States. You know, a lot of the cultural identity and the sacred practices that my ancestors that were enslaved here in the United States held was forgotten. And there was something about reclaiming and you know, and practicing, you know, some of those things that, you know, I had to go and travel to find, because they aren't so present in the United States, or at least where I'm from in the United States. So like also aspects of like traditional African spirituality, which is kind of what I also would consider shamanism. You know, those sorts of practices have all combined to help me to really transform and heal the trauma, and there's also this I don't remember the woman's name, but she calls it the victim triangle, and I'm sure this will be something that we explore, maybe not directly this term victim triangle, but this kind of concept in Restore Unity. And she speaks of the feeling of, you know, victimization, and how there are victims, there are like villains, and there are rescuers and heroes, and that they're all actually part of this like kind of like ego triangle of different versions of like narcissism. I know that sounds extreme, you know, when people think narcissism and narcissists, they think really extreme, but just like these like self kind of absorbed ways of perceiving reality, and you know, they hurt me, it's their fault, you know, they owe me, you know, victim mentality, or you know, I'm entitled, so on and so forth. It's like maybe more of the villain mentality, you know. And I'm not like a total expert on this, but as far as like speaking it, but like my soul has gone through and like sat with awareness of myself and the way that I play these roles and identify with these kind of roles depending on the situation and the circumstances, and seeing how they're limiting, like how these perceptions become limiting and limit your own personal agency and personal power to be sovereign and be whole. Meaning not allowing what someone else did to take your power away, because then they win. Mm-hmm. So it's not so much like bypassing and ignoring, you know, any sort of pain or trauma, but it's like sitting with the pain and doing the inner transformation to liberate oneself from the places where the personal power has been given away, based on what someone else said or did, or relying on what someone else will say or do to feel a certain way. So I hope that makes sense. Yeah, I know that was a lot. I'm going to take a pause there.
That's okay, because there's lots of questions that come up out of what you shared. And I just want to address this victim, villain, or persecutor and rescuer or savior triangle, because I've been working with this for some time now too, and another overlap in our process here. Lovely to discover that with you, Danielle. And what came up for me while you were sharing about that I just wanted to tease out a little bit more in our conversation is this awareness. I think you mentioned it, that we all can be at any point in that triangle, at any spot in that triangle, and that the same kinds of things that happen when we're in the victim place of feeling like our well-being is dependent on somebody else's behavior is also true for the persecutor and the savior, where the persecutor is depends on their well-being depends on being able to persecute someone else and to have control
right.
over or domination over someone else. And that's why they can, that persecutor role can be so forceful at maintaining that, because persecutors are just as dependent, are very dependent on having someone to persecute.
Right? Yes.
And
yes.
We can even, and then the savior is the same way. The savior's sense of worth and purpose is dependent on someone else that they can save and
right
and mm-hmm. benefiting from their savior activities, right? And that they need that. And we can flip from one or the other of this. And I've had this experience myself of, you know, trying to be someone's savior. And then when they're not being saved by my efforts in some way, then I become the persecutor. And I'm like, why aren't you doing what I'm telling you to do?
Right? Oh, yeah. Yes.
And so becoming aware of that triangle and returning to sovereignty of like, you know what, everybody has their own sovereignty. Everybody's on their own journey. If, you know, we are influencing each other in various ways, and how can I just tend to myself and tend to the ways in which I'm influencing others so that it's as beneficial as it possibly can be, but without trying to control them or, you know, in some way. And yeah, so I just wanted to say a little bit about that. And I also wanted to, and maybe see if you had anything else to share about that. And I also have some questions about how you feel, what you might say to myself and other people who have who appear white and have, you know, more predominant European ancestry, about benefiting from some of these and the whole idea of cultural appropriation when it comes to seeking out healing processes and all the lineages that you spoke of, like yoga and African spirituality, have become quite problematic for, even though they're very beneficial, have become quite problematic for white people who are exploring social justice to continue to benefit from, because of the whole idea of cultural appropriation. And then there in our healing process, and I'm the same as you, yoga was always my thing, and I have begun the practice in the past number of years, becoming more and more aware of social justice, especially in relation to the Indian culture from India, and the dynamics of yoga and how yoga was appropriated in various ways to start making reparations for that and for my, albeit inadvertent, participation in that, and seeking my own, seeking the European lineages and nourishing that connection that are actually of healing value for my own ancestral healing and trauma healing process as well. But I'm curious what you might have to say, because I feel like a lot of cultural appropriation happens in that desire for healing among white folks. And that then when that's kind of discouraged, or, you know, adamantly discouraged, the cultural appropriation, I mean, part of what I do is to say, well, we still need to do the healing. We still need to heal the root of this and find pathways to do so that aren't perpetuating harm, if you know what I'm saying. So I encourage people to seek out their own ancestral lineage and the roots there of the wounding that has created this harm. And I'm curious what you might have to say about that.
Oh, wow. Yes. Ooh, thank you for that question. And thank you for clarifying with the perpetrator, rescuer, and victim, villain, and that triangle, because yeah, you said it so beautifully, and I see it as like there's this like codependent relationship that is present that most of us are not aware of, and are not aware of like this like kind of ego identity that attaches to, like, you know, I'm the savior, you know, I, you know, am the victim, and we don't even realize it, and we kind of perpetuate it because we're not aware of it, and yeah, and are just reliant on each other and on these kind of wounds to like maintain some aspect of identity that is hard to break free from. It's almost like, I feel like sometimes it's like we are kind of continuing to feed the trauma by kind of like making it a part of our identity, or whatever our relationship is to that trauma, whether it is the persecutor or the perpetrator or the victim, but that there's something that like is attached to that on a subconscious level, even though it's maybe causing pain, there's like still some like attachment to it. So it's really fascinating. And that could be a whole nother conversation.
Maybe part two on our podcast. Yeah. Dive into that more and more.
Yeah. I have or in Restore Unity. Yeah. Or in Restore Unity, we'll be uncovering that. But so, I don't know if I've actually like really directly addressed the question that you posed, because yeah, I personally have drawn such healing from different practices from different cultures throughout the world. And I do see that there is a universal aspect to the practices. And they are all connected in some way, because we are all connected, which is, you know, another important thing that we're going to be diving into in Restore Unity in that program. But I think the big challenge comes because this colonization, you know, this like colonized mentality, this kind of Western mentality has an agenda oftentimes, and it kind of thinks that it knows better. And, you know, that's the whole reason why we're in this position to begin with, right? With the oppression and privilege and colonization, is because people came of European descent came throughout the world and, you know, imposed their beliefs and imposed their agendas upon people, you know, which ultimately has really had a destructive effect on cultural traditions and, you know, on the planet itself and on us as people. So I don't know, you know, I think I may have a different view on like cultural appropriation, because in some ways I think it could be the like reverse of colonization. You know, it could be like a form of decolonization by really connecting to the cultural practices that have been colonized, you know, to bring them kind of back to life. But again, there's always the tricky moment where it's like, how are you trying to capitalize off of this? Are you using these things for your own selfish gains yet again, but in a different way? And, you know, this is not an easy thing to be aware of, I think. And I think it's very nuanced. And so just, I think, having conversations in each situation is important. And, you know, like with yoga, for example, just the fact that it's totally changed, you know, it's been colonized yet again, the ancient practice. And as a consumer, you know, capitalistic thing now, and it's lost its essence of actually what it is really about. And then that false understanding of what it's about, and becoming more self-serving practice is also dangerous in some sense. I mean, dangerous maybe is a dramatic word, but you know, it is. It's like when you think you're doing something, but you're not really doing it. That's you know, lack of awareness can be dangerous. So yeah, I don't know. I think that what you said about like connecting into your own cultural lineage is very important, because I think it's universal in so many ways. The roots of each culture before kind of like the colonial mindset. And so there is less risk of kind of taking something that's not yours, I guess, and kind of stealing it with your own lineage. But I also think that there's probably a way to connect with traditional teachers in other cultures, traditional healers in other cultures, that can be supported by people that are not of that culture in a very humble, intentional way. Mm-hmm. So I hope that speaks to your question, and I would love it if you have like any even more specific questions around any of that.
Thank you. Yeah, it does speak to it. And one of my mentors around this makes a distinction between cultural appropriation and cultural appreciation. And that distinction has been really helpful for me. And some of the distinctions that you made too, of like, okay, are you appreciating this teaching at its essence, or are you not really diving that deeply into it and commodifying it and turning it into something that perpetuates your unhealthy patterns, which is pretty common these days. And then perpetuating harm. And for me, one of the things that has come more and more into the forefront of my awareness in the work that I do, the womb-centered healing work, and which involves more and more ancestral healing work, which, you know, when we talk about a lineage, our own heritage, the farther you go back in your ancestry, we're all, you know, the heritage is all mixed everywhere. I mean, by the time you go back a certain number of generations, you have like 13 generations, you have 8,000 ancestors. Because it doubles every time you go back. Mm-hmm. Like you have four grandparents, right?
Yeah.
And then you have eight great grandparents, and then you have 16 great great grandparents, and it just goes back and back and back. That's doubling. And so I've traced my ancestral lineage, but unfortunately some of the lineages you can't trace. I know that seven generations back I have a Shaka ancestor, but that is really hard to trace because the genealogy wasn't kept record of. And So there's a whole leg of my ancestry that there's perhaps no record of in your typical places where you would search for your ancestry.
Right.
So that's a whole nother question of like, what aspect of our ancestry are we looking towards? And for me, the most accurate records of my ancestry are, of course, my European lineage And as I look back to it through that ancestry to find sources of healing, those have been annihilated. They're there, but they've been annihilated, just like, or even, well, they're still there. Actually, I did travel to England and was able to connect with that energy, some of the earth-based spirituality lineages there in England. But even in Europe, where those lineages are still, where you can still find them intact, I find there to be a lot of cultural appropriation, especially of Native American practices. And then we're in the fuzzy zone of, is that cultural appropriation or is it cultural appreciation?
Where right.
That, right. And
yeah.
And yet for me, I feel like if I am benefiting in a healing way from a cultural practice whose people are still being egregiously oppressed in a system where I am not egregiously oppressed or less egregiously oppressed than they are, then I need to be making contributions to benefit those people.
Yes.
Alleviate that oppression.
Oh, yes.
And I have lots of European associates who I talk to about this, about the cultural appropriation. And that's a difficult conversation too, because, you know, they're not here in the United States in the energy of this conversation and, you know, what's been happening here in the United States, feeling kind of like a revolution on these matters. And for them, it's just business as usual. And I'm over there saying, but wait a second, we can't be doing that. You know, we have to be supporting this change, this healing, this collective healing. And so I'm curious about any, there's lots of questions in there. I might not have put a question mark on them, but they're all in there. And so I'd love to hear your reflections on any of that I shared.
Yes, so beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I think that the point that you made about the fact that even in European lineages, there's been oppression and, you know, and like the information, the healing, you know, wisdom has been lost because of oppression on some level. So there's the trauma there too. And so like just tracing things all the way back is really powerful to then even see like, well, you know, it's happened to every culture on some level, and to then, I also wanted to say that, yeah, I agree with what you were saying about, I mean, like a lot of these cultural practices that may not be of your own personal lineage are not necessarily meant to be exclusive to one culture either. You know, I mean, like they began in one cultural context, but, you know, think practices like yoga and Buddhism and meditation and, you know, African spiritual practices and shamanism are universal. I mean, they're about union and about oneness, you know, yoga in particular. So it is for everybody, but as long as it's like not taken out of context and appropriated to feed what it's here to allow us to transcend, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. And so I feel like this is where the restoring unity piece comes in, you know, to see that this is about the human condition. And yes, of course, we do need to acknowledge the differences in lineages and the ways that we're cultural appropriating and the ways that people are still being oppressed today. And that's important. And there's also the opportunity to kind of transcend the story, you know, that that keeps us separate and that continues to, you know, identify with being a victim, and having less power, you know, in that identification as being a victim, and that there are opportunities for all of us to see kind of the universal human condition of, like, that even within this victim triangle, we speak of how the victim isn't actually always the person that's worse off, you know, like there is, even when you really look closely, there's like equally codependent, you know, disempowering tendencies that come from being, you know, holding any of the positions in the triangle. And so I think that's where we can begin to restore the individual cultural narratives and individual narratives around oppression, and start to see, okay, well, what if we look beyond, you know, what if we address what's happened to each and every one of us and our role in it and become aware of how we're perpetuating it? But what if we can start to let go of the attachment to these kind of identifying with these things and see and feeling like they're, you know, some are better or worse, or, and see how on some level, you know, I think on the like union level, like, you know, when we speak of yoga and uniting with, you know, all that is, that, that it's all kind of one thing that is not against us. It's not meant to limit us, is meant to bring us, ultimately bring us like closer together in the end. I know that's pretty far out there, but I mean, that's where I think that's the direction where we're heading ultimately. That this, like, you know, the pain and the suffering and the healing and the forgetting and the remembering, it's part of this process of deepening, like, of deepening into this, like, collective awareness that ultimately brings us together.
Well, you know, I love it that you said that that coming together in collective unity might seem like it feels really far out there, given all of the pain and the struggle and the forgetting and remembering that's going on, and the magnitude of healing that seems to be necessary. And I just, what came up for me when you shared that is that anyone who's had a close, intimate relationship with another human being that builds and grows over time has had the experience of probably having moments of conflict and suffering in that relationship, where there's some harm done, some misunderstanding, and then having that bring those two people, bring us closer together in unexpected ways, when both people in that relationship really use that moment for their own personal growth and reach for each other across whatever seemingly insurpassable abyss was created by the situation. And so we have those experiences in our personal close relationships right now, it feels like, that can guide us and be maps for how to come together again collectively and as communities that have been so divided by, you know, all these different circumstances. And so I just wanted to that came up as you were saying that, as something to offer, as that it might seem really far away, but oftentimes it's so close that we don't even notice it, that we have the wisdom available, and it's just a matter of applying it in a new way, in a new circumstance, and following these ancient maps of caring for each other and reaching for each other and having compassion and forgiveness and taking responsibility and holding each other accountable for our responsibilities and all of these healthy relationship patterns that we might need to relearn or reestablish or reclaim at any given point. And that we might have that experience in our personal close relationships that we can apply. So I just wanted to share that and see how you feel about any of that.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I mean, as you said, conflict is actually part of growth, and or it's an opportunity for growth. You know, you can have a challenge in a personal relationship and you can choose to be resentful and not forgive and like even begin to create a story around, you know, who you are as a person and who someone else is as a person, as something that's like static and unchanging, you know, like, or you can choose to see it as like, you know, we're learning, we're growing, we're changing, we're evolving, and, you know, mistakes are part of how we grow and learn and become better people as individuals and collectively, you know, and, you know, things have happened on a collective level, like group level, cultural level, and on an individual level. And, you know, I love that you use the personal relationship example, because I think that that's really powerful and really helpful to like kind of reconceptualize, I guess is the word, you know, how we handle these situations. And I think, you know, we can be really sensitive and take things really, really personally and let things really get to us, which ultimately is limiting to us, you know, and most harmful to us. Or we can kind of choose to say, no matter what, you know, no matter what, how much it may seem like someone else has power over me, I always have some level of choice, and to be able to focus more on the choice that's present, which might seem a lot smaller, and more and limiting, but to really focus awareness there is, I think, a way out, you know, a way out of the feeling of being trapped or limited. And in some ways that one place where we do have choice is the best place for growth, you know, is the best place to navigate. And in that sense, it becomes a blessing, because it's an opportunity for us, not against us. You know, it may have the illusion of being, you know, a disadvantage or a challenge. But, you know, sometimes challenges and disadvantages actually reroute us to something that is beyond kind of, you know, what we would have explored otherwise. So I think that's a really key opportunity to like shift the focus and reclaim your power and empowerment through even that, you know, limit, what may be limited opportunity or or path. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that's kind of like an abstract way of seeing it, you know, but I mean, I guess I can give a specific example for me personally. So we talk about privilege in the United States, right? And I've traveled to different parts of the world, and I've actually been like, wow, what Americans value as privilege is actually can be seen in some ways as a weakness or as a limitation. If you shift the perception, and for me as a Black woman, I'm like, wow, you know, because I didn't have this privilege, I have access to some other things that are, you know, to me feel more aligned, you know, but had I just had privilege, I would have not even been aware of it because I would have been, you know, privileged, you know, in this sense, in this way. And so then that for me becomes an opportunity to be like, actually, privilege is so relative, you know, and it's something that you can reclaim yourself. It's something you can define yourself. It's something you can explore. And I feel privileged to have the privilege to choose that, you know, or to like explore that because of my, what some would say, unprivileged position.
Yeah.
I know it's a bit of a, like a tongue twister, or like a riddle to say, but go ahead.
I've reflected on this a lot, and there's some specific things that I've seen for myself being a woman and feeling like it's a privilege to be a woman, even though there are certain privileges that one might see as that I don't have as a woman.
Right. Yeah.
But the lack of those privileges of those, you know, that many people who grew up as men have created a need in me as a woman to find internal sources of power.
Yes.
To connect with internal sources of power that people who are raised as men don't ever feel the need to develop for themselves.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. many men never learned how to do the basic things in caring for a household that leaves them at a big disadvantage unless they manage to find a wife.
Yeah.
So many men never learned how to cook food for themselves. Women have grown up not learning how to cook as well. But I think probably more men never learned how to cook food for themselves in the, you know, given the context of the gender roles that are typical still today. Many men grew up not learning how to do their own laundry, how to clean their own house, how to manage a household. You know, manage their finances, a lot of women don't learn how to do these things too, but I'm just saying there's a tendency for that to be the case. Whereas growing up as the oldest daughter in the family with three younger children, I was the one called upon to cook meals, to help with the cleaning, the chores, you know, all of that. And my brothers didn't get that training.
Right.
And so that could be perceived as a privilege that they had that I didn't have, or it could be perceived as, thank God I learned how to do that, those things. And
yeah,
so bad for them that they didn't learn how to do those things. And now they're having to struggle as adults, not having those skills and always having to get somebody else to do those things for them.
Right.
Or and figure out how to learn how to do it as an adult, which is a lot harder to do than if you're a kid, you know?
Right.
So just an example of that. And I imagine that's also the case in other privileged versus under less privileged, more privileged relationship dynamics.
Yes. I love that example. And I mean, truthfully, like, as humanity like hits certain points of like limitation, you know, with like people who are privileged being in power, I foresee, you know, I feel like this is the like, you know, prophetess in me or like the seer in me. I foresee there will come a time when people who are in positions of power and are privileged are going to be limited, are going to look to people who aren't in these positions for answers or for help or for guidance or for a new perspective. You know, it's just to me, like when you look at the bigger, and that's always what I look at, the bigger cycles of, you know, contraction, expansion, evolution, and how we evolve, you know, through these ups and downs, and how things are always changing. On the bigger picture, on the bigger realm, you know, so like, you know, we're talking big planetary cycles, even sometimes, you know, it takes to like move through all the layers, but eventually what was up must go down, mm-hmm. if you will. So, I mean, and it doesn't have to be a negative or positive, you know, it doesn't have to be seen as negative or positive. It's just a natural cycle.
Yeah,
that we undergo, right? Yeah,
ocean waves up and down.
right, and
circulation of nature.
Right, so it's a beautiful thing when you can tap into that layer of consciousness and awareness. And when I was saying, like, you know, the practices I work with, like, I kind of, you know, I refer to it as yoga, but it's just union, and it's beautiful that Restore Unity is the name of this program, because, you know, the unity and the union that comes through like spirituality, any form of spirituality, you know, any ancient form, you know, contains this teaching, I think, at its essence, at its core, is like to access these levels of awareness and consciousness where it all becomes one, and it's not dual. It's not black or white. There are cycles where it's black and there are cycles where it's white, but when you get to the higher point, it's neither. It's like the unification of, you know, like of the polarities, you know, of like the one end, the pendulum swinging to one end, the pendulum swinging to another, and then back and forth, you know, so then it doesn't become separate. It becomes kind of one big process of transformation, of growth, of expansion and evolution. So yeah, so that's it for me. That's really it.
Well, just your last description here made me think of a biological example of this that always seems so poignant to me, and it's the story of the sea snail and the jellyfish that have a very symbiotic relationship, and some might even label it as a bit parasitic, but because of the way it goes, it doesn't end up like a parasite usually kills off its host or, you know, damages it irreparably. Whereas this sea snail and this jellyfish, they go back and forth. So what happens is the sea snail will attach to the jellyfish and start feeding off of the jellyfish's essence until the jellyfish shrinks down to a really small size and the sea snail is really big. And it switches at a certain point. Before the jellyfish dies, the jellyfish starts sucking off of the sea snail. And the sea snail starts shrinking and the jellyfish grows big. The jellyfish goes bigger and bigger and bigger till the sea snail is so small that it switches again. And they go back and forth like this.
That is it. That is really it. That's it. I love that example.
And they just coexist in this way that makes me think of the yin yang symbol, where the seed of the yin is at the center of the fattest place of the yang, and the seed of the yang is at the center of the fattest place of the yin. And we tend to see it as a static symbol, but actually I see it twirling around. And that they're feeding and growing off of each other, the yin and the yang, and that seed in the middle keeps blossoming and growing and sprouting and growing of each one, and they each grow thinner and fatter and thinner and fatter as it's waving through the cycles of life.
That is it. That is so it. And yin yang is my favorite symbol too.
Right.
And it's been a constant, you know, symbol that I return to, you know, just to remind myself of this is the process. This is the process. And like you said, even like the center line in the yin yang is that curvy line, you know, that's where it's flowing, you know, it's constantly moving, like you said. So how beautiful. I love this conversation, and I love the example of the jellyfish and the snail, right? Yeah. Is that what it is?
And the snail.
But that's what we are. That's even oppression, privilege and oppression. But, and I think we're, you know, humans are in the midst of like the transitional phase, you know, of like, okay, one has way too much and has grown way too big. And so now we need to, you know, switch it up and distribute, you know, things in the other direction. And I mean, I think it'll change. Like, I don't think it's going to be like, oh, so then now we oppress you. You know what I mean? You oppress me, I oppress you. But it's going to like, be like, oh, well, you know, the trauma, you know, of doing things this way informs us to do better, you know, in the future, but there's always going to be things to learn from, you know, and so it'll go back and forth, like, okay, forgetting, remembering, learning, growing, having trauma, healing trauma, you know, and so forth. But
yeah,
so we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. It's always a mystery to me about, you know, because some people's response to trauma is to find healing and to end the cycle. And other people's response to trauma is to not find healing and to perpetuate the cycle.
Right.
And it's always a mystery to me why one person in one family would have, you know, one person in a family would say it ends here with me in the same family, having experienced the same trauma as other people in the family that go ahead and carry on perpetuating it. Or, you know, no, don't even have to be in the same family. You know, this person A says ends with me, finds healing. Person B continues to perpetuate the trauma. And that sometimes it could be explained by privileges and resources that person A has and person B doesn't have. But other times person B could have all kinds of privileges and they still don't find any healing. They just perpetuate the trauma. In fact, that's quite common that their privilege, you know, made it so
that yeah.
it was comfortable enough that they didn't ever look for any healing. They just felt, you know, just perpetuated whatever the trauma was.
And so
there's a collective growth that's needed, like at a collective level where everyone, enough people, enough momentum is there behind the impulse to say we need to find healing.
Right.
And there's a biological precedence for that too, that I want to share the story of. I heard a woman talk about a book that she wrote about chaos theory and systems theory and her study of the precursors to life on this planet, like microorganism early on the planet. And she describes an evolutionary process that she studied evidence of in these microorganisms, where at the beginning they were feeding off of each other and the predatory ones of them would over consume, and it brought them to the point of over consuming to the point of their own extinction, because if you over consume your resources, then you have no more resources and you can no longer survive.
Right.
And she made the parallel to what we're experiencing as a species right now of over-consuming to the brink of our own potential extinction.
Mm-hmm.
And that life itself, the survival instinct of life itself makes a switch at that moment,
mm-hmm.
of saying, oh, we can't do it this way anymore. And those microorganisms learned how to cooperate.
Yes.
And they stopped over-consuming. And that's the only reason we have complex organisms like you and me.
Yes.
That mm-hmm. are made up yep. of all of these microorganisms inside of us and on our skin and everywhere that are cooperating so that we can even be alive.
Absolutely.
And that is that evolutionary shift of going from overconsumption and destroying the environment you depend upon to becoming a cooperative, harmonious member of a community is an evolutionary process that every organism has to go through at one point or another.
Yep.
And so we're just in this natural developmental cycle of like, do we make that evolutionary shift? And her bet was on that we do, that we will.
Yeah, I think so too.
That's what every organism does because the survival instinct is so strong.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I see that like some species like dinosaurs or like the different civilizations that have crumbled.
Right.
You know, yes. I feel like it might have something to do with that. Right. So like there are times when we don't, you know, adapt and evolve to, you know, maintain our species, but that's okay too, truthfully.
Right. And, that's
part of it too.
Yeah, and we have to get to the brink of distinction, like extinction, to the brink of extinction, meaning that a lot of people or a lot of members of a particular species might die before that evolutionary shift happens. And some would say that there are still dinosaurs alive today. They're just smaller and they've evolved. So a lot of people would say that birds were originally dinosaurs.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. then they evolved.
Yeah.
And they don't resemble, and that there's plenty of sea creatures that harken back to dinosaur times that have evolved, and they're no longer, you know, the big dinosaurs that we see skeletons of.
But yeah,
they were there back then too. There's skeletons of them that were alive at the same time as the ones that went extinct, you know. And so life is just this huge mystery that continues to evolve, and we're part of that. And
mm-hmm.
here we are, you know, I mean, the impulse that you have and that I have and that anyone who's signing up for this Restore Unity program has is, I feel that impulse from life itself saying, this is the next step in our evolution in order to survive as a species, to learn how to cooperate and to coexist harmoniously.
Yay. I love it. This is such a beautiful conversation, and thank you so much for I am nature is my greatest teacher and healer of all. You know, you asked me, you know, what my healing practices are. And it's for that reason, because like when we look to nature, it's a perfect example of these, like the bigger picture and the bigger cycles and the, you know, way that we evolve. And it gives me a sense of like awareness and understanding of like, this is the process, mm-hmm. and it's a beautiful process. And I think once we become more aware of it and can kind of surrender to it, actually, like obviously we take action to do the work that we need to heal, but also surrender to like an acceptance of like, yeah, this happened and it's part of the process. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, you know, maybe like painful, and, you know, there's trauma that needs to be healed from it, but it's actually like a natural part of our human evolution.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that's like this reclaiming, this like, you know, empowered agency over, you know, why we're here and how we see ourselves and how we see the world and as being for us and not against us. Mm-hmm. And I'm so excited for this upcoming program to dive deeper with everybody these topics. Yeah.
Me too. So I'm realizing that time has flown away with us as I suspected it might. And so I want to wrap up our conversation here, even though I could sit here and converse on these topics with you for the whole rest of the afternoon. So I want to invite you to share. First of all, I want to say that I'll put the link to the Restore Unity program, which is an 8-week intensive that Danielle and I are both presenting different segments of during the course of the 8 weeks. And there's other guest instructors along with Imani and various other things included. If you want to learn more about that, you'll click the link in the show description. And if you want to, and Danielle, could you share with us if anyone wants to reach out to you personally outside of the context of that, or ask you more about the program itself, how could they best do so?
The best way to reach me is through Facebook Messenger. And my name on Facebook is Danielle, Danielle Ashe. And that's Ashe with an accent over it. So Danielle Ashe, you can find me on Facebook and, you know, find some of the things that I share there. And of course, are welcome to reach out and send me a personal message if that is what you want to do. So thank you so much, Salma. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Danielle. It's a mutual pleasure. And listeners know also that if you want to reach out to me, Salma Morningstar, find out more about the Womb Centered Healing Temple, you can go to wombcenteredhealing.com. And also I encourage you to subscribe to this podcast so that you can, and subscribe to the newsletter, actually the Womb Centered Healing newsletter on the website will get you set up to have notifications every time a new podcast is coming out. All right, that's all for now. Until next time.